Here It Comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. We're going to put a fabulous spotlight on the Southwest this night. The name of our show is What If, the series. What if science could help us prepare for a better future? What if we could make food production more efficient? What if we all learned how to repurpose food waste? Gotta love that one. What if we could understand the building blocks of our universe? What if we could learn about all of the above by taking a trip to Biosphere 2? It is truly, just so truly, a must-see wonder of the world. It's where science lives, and it's you can tell that I am a big fan. I have been out there probably three times in the last year, and here to share some exciting news about what's happening at Biosphere 2 is he's truly a wonder of the world himself, actually. His name is Kevin Bonine. He is the Director of Education and Outreach at Biosphere 2. My own personal commentary on Kevin, he's passionate, fun, funny, and not at all afraid of handling Gila monsters to the delight of children all ages. And to my horror, I just run away. So welcome, Kevin. It's great to have you back here with us.
Thanks so much. It's always fun to be here.
It is fun. I was so excited about this show. So for those people that might not have heard of Biosphere 2, we might explore the question of why not someday, but tell us what Biosphere 2 is. Just give us the brief overview of what it is, where science lives.
Sure. Biosphere 2 has a very interesting history. It was built in the 1980s, and then there were eight people inside in the 1990s for 2 years, seeing if they could live in a closed world, a separate world from Biosphere 1, which is our Earth. And they succeeded with a few little hiccups here and there. I think one of the things they learned most was it's really hard for eight people to get along when they're locked up together
imagine
for
it.
2 years.
I can't, no matter how much you like somebody, just let me see some new somebodies.
Right. And since then, there's been various uses of Biosphere 2, different research projects. Columbia University did some really neat work with climate change and effects on the ocean. There's a whole bunch of different biomes inside Biosphere 2, including a 700,000-gallon ocean and a tropical rainforest. There was a half-acre farm where the Biospherians grew their food, and Columbia grew a bunch of different trees in there and subjected them to different carbon dioxide and temperature and precipitation regimes. And now, under the U of A administration, since 2007, we've built what we call the Landscape Evolution Observatory, and this is our flagship research project, asking questions about water, energy, nutrient cycling at a scale that you can't do anywhere else, which helps us connect the information we know about studying the real world with all of its complexities and unknowns, connect that information with what we know from the lab bench and things at very small scales, because things at intermediate scales, and we have these hill slopes that are 11 meters by 30 meters, things are different. They happen differently. So we're sort of piecing all these things together, learning things that help us better understand things like global climate change models and helping to predict the future.
So many important things for our future, applied science. And what I want to say as a visitor, as a non-scientist, you go in there and you are in the bubble and you start to learn. You go through all of the geographic regions. I mean, you cannot get bored. The people who take you on the tours, all of the things that you can see, it's like, I am such a fan. So I was going to ask you, and I'm never put a guest on the spot, you know that, but who are your visitors? Don't they come from all over the world?
We have visitors from all over the world. I've been told that the name recognition of Biosphere 2 is second only to Grand Canyon when connected with the word Arizona. So we have a pretty impressive name recognition, and we get about 100,000 visitors every year from all over the world. I would say that if you had to characterize the average person, it's probably a retiree from North America, but there's people from all over, all walks of life, all ages, and we have about 10,000 school kids that come every year as well that we do science with.
it's so great to put the focus, to have it in our backyard and in Phoenix's backyard to see what we can do. And it's like, I ask so many of my friends, have you ever been to Biosphere 2? Many of them have not. Many of them make it a trip. It's such a family day that you can do. If you have kids or grandkids, there's a place you can bring your picnic lunch and go out. There's a great cafe there from a local service provider for food there. It's just, it's a day trip that is absolutely and positively delightfully fun, and it makes learning fun, because science can be intimidating, but it's hands-on.
Well, that's right. I mean, science, I think people perceive science as intimidating, but it's not. I mean, we're sort of born as little scientists, and we experiment with things all the time. Sometimes we get in trouble for it as a three-year-old, right, sticking the fork in the socket, but you're a little scientist. You're doing an experiment. You want to see what happens. And people who go on to be scientists, it's they're just continuing to have fun asking questions and searching for answers. It shouldn't be something that's intimidating, and there's not really like one solid resolute block of knowledge that doesn't change. Science is at that cutting edge, that frontier, trying to change what we know, because as we learn more, the things we thought we knew, we sometimes have to change our minds a little bit,
right,
with new information.
Right.
So it's fun. I mean, it's sort of the forefront of ignorance.
It is fun. That's probably why I like it. It's really, really great. So what I would assume, that even though this isn't necessarily your area, that you can't just build it and they will come. You have to continually explore exciting series, have different offerings, continue to offer new content for people that may have been there and want to come back, or put things out that are exciting. So that's the What If series.
Right.
It sounds so exciting and so fun. Tell us about that. What If?
Well, so the What If series is trying to play on that concept that scientists and science are always asking interesting questions. You know, what if you did this, or what if that was the answer? How could we find that out? And we want to share that wonder and that process with people. We have two missions at Biosphere 2. One is cutting-edge research that we do with our U of A faculty and with colleagues and collaborators from around the world. But we also have that education outreach component. And this What If series, What If You Could See Tomorrow, with a different theme each month, is a way to get scientists and what they know and their enthusiasm in front of the public every weekend. And so visitors who come to Biosphere 2 will get to meet a new scientist and new hands-on activities every week. And again, every month is a different theme, and every week is a subset of that topic at Biosphere 2.
And people, it's just, I have to say my personal commentary, I haven't met anyone out there that is not passionate about what they're doing. I mean, it's like, it's fun. We always have to do a shout out to our dearly, dearly loved Rafe, who was as bad excited as anybody. It's like, let's not forget him and keep his wonderful dream and vision alive. And you and Marshall and Matt, I mean, it's a fun place to go hang out.
It's a fantastic place. We have a great staff.
It is.
You mentioned Rafe Sagrin. I don't want to be a downer, but we do miss him. He was killed in a bike accident in May near Oracle. And yeah, we miss him. He was such a force, and was working with our marine ecosystem, doing research and developing fantastic outreach programs. And both of those we're continuing to push ahead.
And we just honor him.
Definitely.
He was, and you and I have talked about it before, he's gone but not forgotten. It's not somebody that just has moved on. He
Certainly.
Lives. He left footprints in a lot of our hearts.
And a testament to the kind of people that work at Biosphere 2, because
yes.
they are very special. The staff adopted the stretch of roadway between Biosphere 2 and the Oracle Highway, you know, as a Pinal County adopt a highway section, and, you know, decorated the signposts for the holidays and those sorts of things. So we certainly treasure his memory.
Yeah, we really do. So Rafe, I know you're listening, buddy, and just keep on keeping on, okay? We want to make what your dream was come true. Okay, I cannot believe that I'm going to be talking about this one. When I was preparing for the show, a friend and I have a joke. On January 1st, we say, Happy 4th of July. And it just speaks about how fast time's going. We're in the almost the third week of January, and like, I didn't even blink. So we're going to talk about your summer academy in July. And I was like, okay, happy 4th of July, here it comes. And what's so exciting about this, it's such an important part and exciting part of what you do, which is absolutely exposing young minds to this robust, exciting, fun community out there. So tell us about the Science Academy. And I know it has an official name, and I did write it down. And yeah.
Well, that's what it is. It's our Summer Science Academy.
Summer Science Academy.
It's sort of our flagship program. We have a number of different things that fall under that umbrella with different collaborators. But what we really focus on is getting middle school students and high school students out to Biosphere 2 for a week in the summer to do research and to develop their collaboration skills and their leadership skills. We get students from 22 different states from around the country.
I want to ask how you do that recruitment. I read that. I did.
Well, we had some...
Is it through schools?
Through schools, through teachers, very tenacious staff put together about a 9,000-person email list around the country and around the world. So we do have students from other countries. I come from a background where experiential learning is highly valued. I think students don't remember the things that they were taught in a lecture room, but if you take them outside and put them in a tide pool
or
have them hold a snake or something like that, they're going to remember that. And so the context in which we have these folks at Biosphere 2 is that experiential learning. Let's do things. Let's get folks outside their comfort zone. We have some fairly well-heeled folks that come and fly in from New York and Chicago and that sort of thing. But we've also been very successful at getting scholarships to support students from nearby.
I was going to ask you that.
And I just had a conversation this morning with a colleague who is half employed by the U of A, the University of Arizona, and half employed by Tucson Unified School District here in town. And they have support to send.
Moses Thompson?
Moses Thompson, indeed.
It's a small town.
A big supporter and friend of all of us. And they're going to send six students this summer from...
From Monzo or from TUSD?
From TUSD schools, the schools that he works with. So
how
I don't know exactly
amazing
which schools yet,
is that?
Yeah, and it's amazing because we don't label these kids. We don't single them out as this one's a scholarship recipient, this one's not. They just all get along together. And we had some fantastic students from the Tohono O'odham Nation last year who... a little intimidated the first couple days, but by day four, they were teaching all these kids from 22 states, 45 kids at a time, songs and chants in their native language in a circle. It was really, really heartwarming.
It's transformative. I mean, there are things that happen on these trips that are transformative for your life.
That's right.
That kids who might not have thought about being scientists, that the seeds are planted, their dreams are starting to be built. I mean, I could not be more excited about anything like that. And I love the scholarship piece. So what are some of the things that they can choose to learn? Does it go in little groups? Do kids pick their area of interest? How does it literally work?
Great question. We do evaluate based on their application materials, sort of where their interests lie. We have three or four research areas depending on the age group. So the middle school week, what we do is a marine science. We do a landscape evolution observatory, which is our soil and water science. And we do our tropical rainforest. And we have the students do work in each of those places for a full day and then rotate to each of the other ones. So all the kids in the middle school week get a chance to experience all three of those activities. In the high school week, we want it to be a little bit deeper experience. So we add a fourth research area, and the kids are put into groups, and then they work very hard on developing a research question and figuring out the methods and collecting the data, analyzing the data, presenting their findings, and they do that over the course of 3 or 4 days. So it's slightly different for the middle and high school weeks, but like you said, it's transformative, and the science is kind of a... I don't know, it's a vehicle for just getting people excited about being curious and learning and being good citizens.
And there are so many ways that kids learn, so many different ways that kids learn, and this uses all of them. It's if you're a visual learner, if you're a hands-on learner, auditory learner, to me, one of the things I know with my background in social services, it really provides such a rich atmosphere for whatever your skill might be to learn that way. And then that ties into, when you're talking about it, the collaboration skills and the leadership skills, because they have to present and talk in front of everybody, which can be intimidating for a middle school kid.
It's intimidating for some of them, but a lot of them overcome that by practicing and by being in a situation where everyone around them is being supportive and encouraging them. We take them to a ropes course, a challenge ropes course run by the University of Arizona. We take them to the university campus for a day to see labs and some of the things there. But that collaboration and leadership, that's a focus in the sense that we actually explicitly talk about those things. And we have outreach scholars, which are U of A students, both undergraduate and graduate, who come up and serve as mentors and role models and are trained to help these younger kids really sort of explore who they are, their strengths and weaknesses, and understand that by working as a group, they can leverage the strengths of each individual and really do a fantastic project.
And the thing that's so great about that is I've met a lot of those people. I call them kids because, you know, now anybody under 50 is a kid to me. Sorry. But it's like the kids. I think about Scatman and a lot of those people that really would be so relatable to kids and exciting and serve as role models. So that's a really great component. I mostly know the Carson Scholars from the Institute of the Environment, but I know they're all over the U of A campus. And putting that piece in is really fun. And does everybody stay out there in the fun casitas?
That's right. We have the Casita Village.
How fun is that when you're a kid?
Right. No, it's a lot of fun. And we do have to think hard about keeping the kids safe and providing an appropriate chaperone opportunity. But there's a lot of fun happening, too.
So there's a concentrated research effort. I mean, outreach effort. The kids come. There's two sessions. Is that right?
There's a middle school session for a week, followed immediately by a high school session for a week. And both of these are in July this year,
okay,
in 2016.
Which is not necessarily a great time to come to Tucson, but it's so much cooler out there.
It's quite a bit cooler.
It's ridiculously cooler.
Right.
It's really unbelievable.
Yeah.
And what do you find, like, do you have an example of one thing like they might do, like just walk us through it a little bit for people that are listening. So what kind of thing might they do that's a project? Because I know you're involved.
Sure. Gosh, there's so many different projects. One group spent their time comparing soils and soil properties from the different biomes inside Biosphere 2 and compared that to the different desert areas around the outside of Biosphere 2. We had a group looking at the photosynthesis of different leaves in our rainforest, depending on the species, depending on whether they were low in the canopy or high in the canopy, depending on whether or not they were in the light or not in the light, depending on what temperature the leaf was at. They really come up with interesting questions every year, and our goal is to give them the space to develop their own questions, because the most challenging and exciting part of science is coming up with an interesting question. And if you just hand kids sort of a recipe of what to do, well, there's no creativity there. There's no thinking there. I think when you get to the point where you're asking kids to do the same kind of thinking and processing as if they were coming up with their own art project, but just in the context of, okay, we're asking a scientific question, then you're really helping them push boundaries and really use their brains.
You know, I can't help it, but I had this thought just fly in. This just into my whirling dervish brain. I'm so not kidding. I loved the movie Martian.
Mm.
First of all, I could watch 2 hours of Matt Damon, even if he didn't have a speaking part. He's just so good and just such a great actor. And I thought about Biosphere 2 when I watched that movie. And I thought about, he really knew a lot as a scientist. He survived Mars. And I really thought about Biosphere 2 and what skills can acquire. I would have been dead in 3 days, okay, because I'm not a scientist. But because he was armed with all of that knowledge and created it to me, it created an interest in science. And how does he know how to do all those things? And obviously he was prepared since he was picked to go to Mars. But it was a very it just got nominated for an Academy Award, which made me really happy. But it's that kind of fun. There was a lot of fun in that movie,
right,
and excitement for what he did because he knew applied science.
Well, thanks for bringing that up, because I think it does highlight the value of science, and it's kind of a metaphor.
It does.
It's a metaphor for our collective knowledge and technology on Earth, but you know, he was the sole purveyor of that on Mars. But it's the same idea, right? If we're gonna take care of ourselves and take care of the planet, we have to be smart about it. We have to use science, and the pace at which population is growing, the pace at which sort of things are changing, we have to sort of wrap our heads around how to do that in a way that's not going to diminish the future opportunities for people. And I think bringing science to bear on that is extremely important, and making science fun and exciting and interesting. It shouldn't be hard, right? We shouldn't think of science as something that is different or abnormal. We sort of highlight all these athletes as the, I don't want to say pinnacles of society, but they get a lot of high-profile coverage.
And a lot
and we
of
high-profile
paychecks.
More. Well, yeah, well, there is that, yes.
But
yes.
It's not really relevant to what this conversation is. It's really the bright minds, and it's the what-if.
Right.
It's the what if. And one of the things I love that I feel is a part of the culture of Biosphere 2 is there really is no such thing as failure. There's just answering questions, and you try experiments, and if they don't work, it's not a failure. Right. It's that you tried the experiment and learned from it and learned what didn't work. So it's that constant exploration of the mind and what if? What if this is possible?
If you knew the answer, then why would you do the experiment?
Yeah, go read it in a book.
Right.
Go on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's very, very
right.
different. And I think that's a really good point. And making science fun and not intimidating. And I just have to ask this question, and there's no bad answer. But are you finding that more girls are interested? There's such, in my day, the research, and up until maybe even 10 years ago, which was probably the last time I checked, you know, girls stop excelling in math at certain days. Well, it's certainly flipped around. Look at how many doctors there are, female doctors. 30 years ago, forget it. So there are really good advances in that, it's been positive for me. So what about girls? For that age, lots of girls, not so many. What?
We have roughly 50% boys and girls in each of the weeks over the past
answer.
Couple of years.
Oh,
so
I love it.
It's very even. I teach a lot of undergrads at the university, and we tend to get more girls in science, more young women in science than we do young men. You know, science is not easy. It's hard. You have to know a lot of stuff, and you have to work at it. And it is fun. But, you know, I can slam this half of the global population because I am one. I think men generally are just a little more lazy. And I think the young ladies are willing to work a little bit harder and stick with it. And it's really fun to watch.
It's awesome. And that's great to say that. And it's wonderful. And to me, it's about the combination of skill sets and ways of learning and having the masculine and the feminine perspectives. And it's just really, it's more about what the world is really like.
Right, and part of the reason we really want to have those middle school students, even though it is a little bit more sort of logistically challenging, that's the age at which if they're turned off to science and math, they rarely ever come back to it.
Right.
So we really want to keep them motivated up until that age, and then obviously beyond.
That's the transformation that can happen.
Right.
And you guys are doing so many things to partner with our community schools and with Tucson and making sure that the Biosphere and the U of A are open and interchangeable and lots of exchanges going on.
Can I give you an example?
Oh,
of that?
Yeah.
So, you know, some of our partners for bringing students on scholarship up to the Science Academy are Big Brothers Big Sisters and Boys and Girls Clubs.
Oh,
so
my
we
gosh,
work with the community.
I love it. I have goosebumps.
We want them to help vet the students that are in need and will benefit from this program. You know, they know the kids and the families, and so we want them to help us choose, and that's worked out really, really well.
That's wonderful to say that.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about an integrated partnership, and they know the kids.
Right.
They're
That's
around
right.
the kids. I mean, it's wonderful. And I will tell you what, this just in, Matt Adamson saying to me in my head, like there's a bud in my ear, Gina, tell people how kids can apply for the scholarship. And if you don't know the exact website, I do, because that's important. There are parents that'll be listening, kids that'll be listening. So it's Biosphere 2, and it's the number 2.
That's right.
.org.
That's right.
/education/student-science-academy. And I'll say that again. It's Biosphere 2 with the number 2.org /education/student-science-academy. And if anybody's listening and wants to know, you can always email us, Gina at Mrs. Green's World or Kelly at Mrs. Green's World, and we'll give you that information. And I did want to ask you this too, like some details. How many total slots are available? And if you said that, I didn't hear it.
Yeah, so we're aiming for about 40 students for each of the 2 weeks, so 40 middle schoolers and 40 high school students. The pricing changes depending on when people sign up, so we're trying
early bird special.
Early bird specials, and each month the price goes up by $100. I realize that there are quite a few people out there that can't afford the pricing that we post. Unfortunately, we do not have the resources to provide scholarships to everybody. I mean, we actually do underwrite everybody's participation, but the scholarships we are administering through these partner organizations like Big Brothers Big Sisters, Boys and Girls Clubs, Moses Thompson with TUSD, because we just don't have the bandwidth or the skill set or the relationships with the students that need the scholarships.
And I want to say for people that are listening, like I'm an active member, not as active as I was, because if anybody of my friends are listening, they'll say, yeah, when was the last time you went to a meeting? But at the Rotary Club of Tucson, mm-hmm, Sunrise, mm-hmm. Our Rotary Club, if a young person came to us and asked us for a scholarship, I guarantee you they would walk out of the door with a check. So if you're listening and you can't afford it for your child, look up service organizations. There are Rotary Clubs. There are Kiwanis Clubs. there are organizations, even business organizations like chambers of commerce. Go look, and there are people that are willing to support this and don't know where to write the check.
Right, and that students have certainly done that in the past. They've been very effective at fundraising through those types of organizations. There's been some students that have used tax credit donations by talking with their school and then soliciting folks to give tax credit donations, and that's worked very well. And there's some students that have gone online and used some of these social media fundraising platforms.
Like a little crowdfunding.
A little crowdfunding, and they've been
so
successful
smart.
As well. So there's lots of different ways to generate the money. I wish somebody would just give us a big pot of money and we could just do this for free for everyone, but unfortunately we're not in that boat right now.
I wish someone would just give you a big pot of money too, because it's an investment in our future.
It certainly is.
All of our future. So it's like, yeah, let's do this thing.
That goes to a broader discussion about supporting education, you know, whether you're talking about Tucson or Pima County or the state of Arizona or the U.S. I think if you're not investing in education and preparing folks for the future, we're in trouble.
The tax credit is it's a no-brainer. It's
right.
So easy. You can do it most places online.
Yep.
So it's being creative and thinking about that. And a lot of times people that are not as familiar with Rotary clubs and have that access, because again, it's a demographic. I hope they're listening to the show. We have thousands of listeners, and we'll look at that, because where there's a will, there's a way. There are people out there wanting to meet people that have the need, so they can make it happen.
I mean, I get emails every day from folks who would like to be provided a scholarship, and I don't have the means to do that right now. If some of your listeners, you know, contact you and would like to support a student, I'd be happy to try and do some matching.
And we should talk after the show, because if you have somebody, we can go to my Rotary Club, and I will put my money where my mouth is. Sometimes we've done collections among the members. We've got a very generous club. Every Rotary Club I know in Tucson, and there are 17 Rotary Clubs.
They're fantastic.
Some out in that area as well. So it's a really good idea, but just get creative about your fundraising. The GoFundMe campaign, talk about the skills that would teach a young kid. I mean, I would have been a GoFundMe guru, because I was always selling pretzels and all these things for I went to Catholic school. So it's like, yeah, I could sell anything. But that's a way to contact your relatives and your aunts and uncles and your grandmother and grandfather to say, if you just give me $25, it's going to help. And I never thought about that. What a great way to raise some money through family and friends and extended family.
Right.
Okay, so we have less than 3 minutes left. Two things I want to cover. All of the ways to reach and learn about Biosphere 2. The website is biosphere2 with the number.org.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, very active, content-rich, exciting Facebook page. I try to visit regularly, because not just of the information about Biosphere 2, but about information of important things going on around the world. It's really a good Facebook page, and it's just Facebook. You go to Biosphere 2.
Right.
And I want to say the number so people know. And then Twitter. We are good buddies with Biosphere 2, and thank you, Matt, for always retweeting at B2 Science. So I think that's important. We have 2 minutes left. Do you want to talk about the One Young World coming up in May? Get that in really fast.
Sure. So this is something that has just been announced, and One Young World, I think it's .org. There's lots of information online as well. And this is a group that focuses on youth in their late teens to early 30s who are going to be making a difference around the world in the future. And they have representatives from 196 countries that come to their annual events that are in different places around the world. I think the one in December was in Bangkok. And they're doing a thematic get together with about 500 people from around the world in May. Biosphere 2 and the University of Arizona, Institute of the Environment. There's a bunch of different local hosts. And the One Young World folks are doing a site visit right now. They're in town. And we're so excited to have these folks help bring together the best minds to sort of focus on sustainability and the environment as we think about who's going to be leading the world, you know, tomorrow, and how are we going to solve our problems.
Just the title, One Young World, gives me excitement and hope, and that's what we're working to preserve this great planet of ours. We're all working to do that for the One Young World that's coming up. Everybody, I hope you had as much fun learning about Biosphere 2, learning a little bit about Kevin Bonine, the Director of Education and Outreach at Biosphere 2. Hope you'll visit them, think of supporting them, and hope you'll join me on Saturday, January 30th, with Scott Leonard and Matt Reynolds from Indigenous. They are taking on the filthy fashion industry, and they're making headway, and they have one of the most successful companies in the world, preserving Indigenous communities and cultures in South America. Make it a great Green Week, everybody. Thanks for being with us.